You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sky Sports highs to Steve Evans lows. Life is a roller coaster with Aki Stanley. Just got to ride it. It's the Raw Milk Podcast. Let's have it. Episode 5, we are live. Callum, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Steady away as always. Yourself?
Steady away, mate. That's become one of our calling cards straight away. I'm going to go straight into it because I had two or three complaints last time that we didn't speak at all about what we'd eaten for our tea. So fire away, what have you eaten this evening?
I had a pizza and a spring onion butty. No messing.
Spring onion butty?
Haute cuisine. 3-star Michelin star tackle.
I mean, that is out there. Do you want to, are you going to explain that? Or?
Well, there's many things I thought I'd have to explain on this podcast. The act of making a sandwich is not one of them. Bread, butter, spring onions, maybe a bit of coleslaw if you flush.
I can't tell salt. Whether you winded me up or not. Spring onion is the base of the sandwich. That is the main...
Spring onion is the main component, yeah.
Where is that? I've never even heard of that before. Is that a thing?
Never heard of a spring onion?
I've heard of a spring onion, not a spring
Jesus
onion.
Jesus wept.
I mean, even an onion sandwich would be weird.
Times are hard in church.
Christ alive. What was on the pizza?
Meat feast.
Nice, you're living in style, mate. It's midweek. Yeah. What's...
Well, you think last time, you know, we had a few bits of, you know, Samaritan-esque outreach because of my cereal for tea and, what was it, egg on toast twice?
Yeah, we've had egg on toast, cereal... And now we've... I mean, that cereal was ridiculous. We've just gone straight in with a pizza, so...
Yeah, well, glad the good times are all.
The royalties are finally coming in for the podcast.
I hope to get... I hope to be able to turn taps on next week. Get some hot water.
Let's not push it. So what have I had, I hear you ask? I've had soup, because it's homemade soup. And by homemade, I mean my mum made it. As we were talking about just before we came on, I weighed myself... And I was almost in tears at what has become of me. That's not me tearing up, that's just a frog in my throat. But I just thought, right, I'm going to have a week of soup because that sounds like something you should do when you're trying to lose a bit of weight.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean, it's shit, but it is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's a bit like asking Dr. Shipman to give you COVID jab, that, I think, mate.
Yeah.
Then the horse is bolted.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, even if you lose weight, it's still going to look like shit. So anyway, yeah, so here we are, 27th of January. We are the night after Stanley have just put the league leaders, Hull, ex-league leaders, Hull City, to the sword. 2-0, two second-half goals from Dion Charles and Matt Butcher. We're going to get to that game in a moment, but let's talk about how we've done since we've last spoken. First of all, we recorded on the 8th last time, and we went to Charlton and took the piss.
Absolutely, absolutely schooled them. I mean, we talked last time about sort of, you know, rock and roll London away days. That would have been a belter. Friday night on telly, taking the piss. Fantastic. And then you get the added benefit of, you know, of Cockneys crying on YouTube. So it's a win-win, really.
Well, that's always good to see. I mean, football. I mean, I guess we are part of it now, but football Twitter, football YouTube, it's a very strange place, isn't it, at times?
It's for folk with no shame, really. I mean, if you're encapsulating that snapshot of joy that you feel on a Saturday and your first instinct's to get your phone out and film the people around you, you need a good hiding.
Well,
we're
not even 4 minutes in, and I'm not going to go on to how I think society's going, but it just shows what society's up to now. You see it at gigs.
Yeah.
I just think it's ridiculous. You know, if you video in a moment, when have you ever gone back to your phone to watch a shaky cam video that you took of a brilliant moment?
Right. Like, let's think of some of the classic games we've mentioned. You take the Pearson winner. Imagine the Clayton end, they'd all spontaneously whip their phones out and they were stood there like goons.
Yeah, gobshite.
Absolute waste of time. If you see someone at Clayton End and they're filming themselves for the YouTube channel, just smack that phone out their hand.
Yeah, I mean, I do think we've got a small, a younger fan who does that. So if it is a younger fan, I'd say don't do that. but if he is over the age of 18, then Callum said you can do it.
Yeah. In the words of Brian Potter, ever kissed a girl?
Yeah. Hey, listen, you live and learn. We've all made mistakes. I mean, I remember first game at season, Burton away. For me, I tried to do that reaction video on Twitter.
I'm going to find that.
And I have never got as much abuse in my life.
Jesus, what?
So I'm never again. Me and my mate were talking about this the other day, actually, and I know we've gone off on a tangent already, but the thing that really, really highlighted it for me was when Liverpool won the Premier League in May, and you've got this 30-year wait. It's probably, there's like millions of people watching it. Sky Sports have got 500 cameras around Anfield watching the players go up, receive the trophy. You go up there, and Sadio Mane, who's been fantastic all season, one of the main men, has just got his phone out and he's just videoing it all. And I just thought, Sadio, mate, there's no danger that this will not be videoed. Someone's got this sorted for you. Yeah. This is your time to just enjoy yourself.
I think personally, he should have had his medal took off him for that. I think it's a crime, as you say, but it's societal. And, you know, if you're of a certain generation now, not to sound like, you know, the Monty Python Four Yorkshiremen sketch, but it's what they do. You know, it's commonplace now, isn't it?
Yeah.
I agree with you. I'd rather live in the moment. I'd rather, because you can always look at videos, you can always go back, you can always see things on YouTube or the Football League highlights or whatever it is, but you can't ever capture that pure moment of ecstasy.
No.
You know, if you've got a corner or a penalty or a free kick, live in that moment and enjoy it.
Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, well, if you don't know exactly what we're referencing to, I think we'll just put the clip here.
We've just had our arses handed to us on national television by Accrington fucking Stanley. Fucking spineless fucking wankers.
Yeah, he was pretty angry, wasn't he? But as well, Dan Jules started his own campaign last week, hasn't he? Called the Teams Like Accrington Stanley campaign. We saw a little bit of that with Hull City last night as well. But I mean, you look at Charlton, they're ex-Premier League. I think we, Well, they don't have a right to be disappointed, but you can see why, can't you, at the Valley. 20-odd thousand seater, and we did absolutely rinse them as well from start to finish.
Yeah, I mean, if we got back-to-back relegations and then we were playing, you know, no disrespect to them, great fellas at Iron Gate, but if we ended up in the same league as Bamber Bridge
yeah,
and they came to Crown and did us over, we'd probably have a similar kind of attitude. So I understand where it comes from. But also, there is that tinge of arrogance. I mean, you're in League One, lads. By hook or by crook, it's a meritocracy at our level. You end up where you deserve to be. And we schooled them. End of.
Yeah, I mean, goals either end of the either side of half time. We never really looked in doubt of taking all 3 points. To be honest, it was assured. I mean, we were just good all over the pitch, really.
It were comfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't a smash and grab. You'd have took a smash and grab. But it was absolutely, we dominated the play. You can have no complaints with it.
Yeah, and it got us in that mindset, just a really excited mindset, didn't it? Because we'd come back, we'd got a few good results again. And, it set us up really nicely. So on Sky as well is always nice, because you always get a few extra 100 retweets when Sky like put a video on. It's people referencing the club, people seeing the club. You've got, you know, Paul Cook in the studio saying that we're playing good football. Which is always nice to see. But yeah, it's always just that extra bit of oomph. And then that led us nicely onto Gillingham at home, which we all thought would be a pretty standard win, I guess. We're in that position now where you think we'll beat sides like that, but vintage Stanley,
yeah,
we absolutely don't.
We've only raised the shield of pessimism twice. Once was for the Gillingham game and once was for Wigan away. But again, yeah, we thought we'd turn Gillingham over. We were on a good run of form. We'd had the dicking in the Papa John's, Domino's, Portaloo, Kentucky Cup, whatever it's called. But you don't really count that. There was that many changes. It was almost a friendly, wasn't it, really, for us?
Yeah.
But the Gillingham game, yeah, just a rare off day. We looked a bit tired. We looked a bit lacklustre. You know, we're keeping faith a lot with a winning team, which is the right thing to do, but it's inevitable we will get leggy at some point.
Yeah, the games are coming thick and fast as well. Yeah. It was always going to happen. Steve Evans' side as well, always really, they came to do a job and they did that.
Yeah, I think at times it was something like 46 seconds before he was in the linesman's ear.
Oh my God, that was ridiculous.
Yeah, straight down that touchline.
I mean, what are you possibly moaning at then?
Yeah, I mean...
Stomachache?
The way he was running down, he was running towards the coppice end, so one can only, you know, speculate that he could get a faint whiff of the Holland's pies from Manchester Road.
Yeah.
Probably just piqued his interest.
If it was the other side, maybe Clayton Park.
Clayton Park as well, yeah. So you can't blame him. It's like Graceland for him, isn't it? you can't blame him.
I mean, other pie manufacturers are available as well. But yeah, indeed. Not in East Lancashire.
Yeah, but not Pucker, because they're a bit shit.
Do they still sponsor us, though?
No.
Oh, it's Clayton Park now, isn't it? Yeah.
That's the best transfer I've ever made.
Yeah, it was. That's up there with Chris Eagles. I don't know.
Gary Taylor Fletcher.
But yeah, so Gillingham beat us. We had a good goal, but we were shit. We did look leggy.
Yeah, it was weird because it knocked the stuffing out of us. It was right before half time. You think, right, second half, they're going to get a bollock in at half time. We'll come out, we'll have a do. But we just didn't turn up.
No.
But again, I think in a weird way, you can sort of rationalise it to yourself when they don't turn up. Like, if we'd knocked at the door and hit the crossbar, you know, 8 times,
yeah,
that's, you know, that can make you tear your hair out. That was just one of those things. We weren't at the races, and Hughesy, in his interview, said as much, said, you know, Gillingham came, done the number on us, but we, you know, it wasn't up to our usual standard, really. So one, not one for the purist, I'd say.
No, not one that'll be remembered, not one that'll enter our classic games section anytime soon.
I think it's ironic because all week people have been referencing the 7-4 as one of like the Crown Grounds great games, and it was inevitable that we were going to get a damp squib like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and then that brought us on to going to Hull the Tuesday after, really, trying to bounce back. It was a good opportunity for us to try and bounce back against a team that are up there, that are playing really, really well. And we didn't show up, we weren't at the races, but also they were a much better side than us on the night as well. And I think you could even see that in last night's game as well.
Yeah.
They were a good side.
They're very good on the ball, aren't they? Yeah. As you should expect for the, you know, they've got 5 times our budget, as one sort of Hull wag was saying. But that was a strange game because there's a tendency on Stanley results to look at it two ways. You get your sort of we're happy to be here, and we can't compete with teams like this. Versus disgrace, get him out. And I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle. Hull on the day probably are a little bit better than us. You know, they are a bigger club. If they turn up, they will win. That's the nature of the beast. But we didn't help ourselves with comical second and third goals. And I think
even the first goal as well was poor defending.
Yeah, I think, again, it's one of those. If you said we're going to go there and lose 3-0, you probably wouldn't bat an eyelid. But I think we could have done a little bit better. Having said that, they were very good.
Yeah, I think it was the manner in the defeat, wasn't it? It's just frustrating when you do concede a few goals that you think, you know.
Yeah, it's a backhanded compliment to the lads, really, that they've put in shifts so often this season where you do get a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, that was
because they've raised your expectations.
Yeah, they've set their own standard.
And I think the players themselves, you know, would probably find it a little bit patronising if we turn around and said, oh, you know, you're only on 300 quid a week, you can't compete. They want to compete, and they've shown they can compete. And I think they deserve to be held up to high standards because that's how they play now. We're not here for the crack.
Well, so that brings us on perfectly to last night as well. And I was there for the Aki Observer. Going into the game, if I'm perfectly honest, I thought that they were that good last week. It's a strange situation, not a situation that you're going to get much in football. You're playing a team that has bullied you 3-0 just 7 days ago. In the meantime, Hull have been to Pompey, another good side, beat them 4-0 away. They're flying top of the league. They're expecting blood again. Their confidence is sky high. And I just thought that the mental sort of implications of that, two straight defeats on back-to-back for us, I expected them to come here last night and do us again. I expected another good performance from them and to us be, especially with the injuries and suspensions that we have as well, I expected us to struggle.
I took a point, but I also expected us to be a bit better at home. And as the day went on, icy pitch, great work by the volunteers to get it on, and Buzzer, of course. Rain lashing down. Well, it was raining sideways, wasn't it? Mm. I thought, big club, coming to Crown Ground, no fans, sideways rain. It gives you that cup tie feel. And they don't fancy it, these big teams, sometimes. And I think it helped us, in a way, playing them again, because it's an instant chance to get your season back on track. If we played, you know, a middle or bottom of the table, if we played Swindon at home, for example, and got dicked again, the wheels start to come off, don't they? Whereas this was a thing where the players could go, all right, well, we got dicked 3-0, they are the benchmark. Mm-hmm. Can we go out there and can we match them and can we give them a game? And again, you talk about small turning points in games and small turning points in seasons. They score a terrific goal. That Josh McGinnis header was a great move and a great finish. And everyone watching it at home, their head just sank.
Yeah.
And I thought, here we go, 2-3, 4-0 now. Gets given offside. We grow into the game. Great finish by Dion. Superb move for the second goal. And I thought we were good value. I thought they had a lot of the ball, but I can't remember Baxter making too many saves. One or two.
No, and when we'll talk about Nathan Baxter in a minute, but I remember at half-time I was thinking, we're matching them very, very well, but they had a bit more of the ball. And I thought, as time went on, that experience, that bit more quality maybe might tell.
Yeah, the nous.
Yeah, exactly. Especially with players like McGinnis. Wilkes has been about now for a while. The lad up front, I can't remember his name, who Baxter scored well off.
Honeyman, Smallwood, they've got great players.
It's a double barrel.
Yeah.
Can't remember his name.
I'll be from Baxter in the morning.
But I expect him to come out maybe second half and sort of turn the screw a little bit. What I found was, exactly like you said, I was calling before the game, let's change the shape, 4-4-2, let's try and get a point against the good side. The lads, I think, even showed in the celebrations for the goals what that meant to the players as well, because they have had a bit of criticism, the first back-to-back defeats of the season. The fan base were maybe thinking, oh shit, where do we go from here? It felt like a really pivotal night for us. And like you say, if we would have got beat last night, then you are struggling a bit, because then we have got back-to-back games for a while. And you do think to yourself, we're running low on confidence. Massive trip to Plymouth at the weekend. Where's the next win coming from? To win again under all them circumstances is a credit to the team. But also, I think, shows how good this team can be and shows how good of a team they actually are as well.
Yeah, and credit to Coley as well. I mean, Coley often gets criticism for not making changes and not making subs, but he tinkered a little bit last night.
No subs again last night.
Yeah, but we tinkered a little bit last night with sort of the formation and brought Owakwe back in from the cold, and I thought it was absolutely superb.
Yeah, well, exactly.
The knock that started off the second goal was a thing of beauty.
Well, an assist, and really, the second goal was pretty much the assist.
Yeah,
wasn't
it? And he had a few, like you say, he worried the keeper a few times. He was there a lot, had a few shots, yeah. Didn't he? A few good saves by the keeper. He looked the same Owakwe who scored those screamers against Peter on the opening day.
Yeah, second half he was playing in front of me, and at times over the last maybe 2 months or so, he's almost looked like he's lost a yard of pace, lost a bit of confidence. But last night he was electric, alive.
Yeah. And I think because he's such a specimen, he's a big lad, isn't he? I think you forget how young he is as well.
Yeah.
He's always, was he 19, 20, something like that. Yeah. So he's going to make mistakes, he's going to come in and out of form. But he has got that class and he has got that ability to turn a game. And if we can keep him fit and keep him on his game, I think he's a really dangerous player for us.
Especially, it's playing in that formation as well. He's got McConville just on the inside of him, tons of experience in that role. He's got Colby Bishop up front, who's going to hold the ball up all day for him. And behind him, he's got Sheriff as well, who's, well,
class,
solid as a rock.
Yeah.
So it's a really good base point for him to sort of try and flow as a player and be that little flash of quality. And he was trying that last night. Again, sometimes it doesn't come off for him, but it's nice to have that opportunity to have someone who can go at a man and try and do him.
Yeah, and again, you know, that's the way Coley likes to play. You know, Coley's often said that he tells the defenders, play it. If you make a mistake, it's my fault. And like you say, you know, what one? If you're trying to play it from the back, every other game, you're going to make a rick. You're going to give them a chance. But it's a lot better than hoofing it and giving the ball straight back. If you do that against a team like Hull, you give them the ball, they'll punish you.
Yeah.
You've got to keep the ball. You've got to make something. You've got to work something. And on that topic, I thought Ben Barkley came in and did tremendously well. Hasn't played a lot of football. Kept his head down. Hasn't mourned. Came across really well in his post-match interview as well. It just goes to show we do have that little bit of strength in depth now as well, which a few of us were sort of concerned about.
Yeah, I think that's something we've spoken about before, isn't it? And I think it does highlight that even these players that are on the periphery, you know, Ben Barkley's been with us now maybe 18 months, hasn't he? He's played the odd game here and there. I do say that when he has come on, a lot of the times he's looked very, very good. There was the game against Rochdale on New Year's Day last year when he did. I think we subbed him off after half an hour because he got a yellow card and he looked like he was going to get sent off, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was the game that McConville.
But he always looks very composed on the ball, very calm.
Yeah, and I mean, last night he looked like he'd been playing there all season. Yeah. He was mopping up again, especially against people like McGuinness, who was an absolute tank.
Yeah.
And never shut up, by the way. He was screaming. It was in Hughes' ear. They were arguing at half-time. Absolute scumbag. But I don't mean that in an horrible way.
Yeah.
Is there a good way of calling somebody a scumbag? Well, yeah, well, there is.
There is.
You're a good scumbag. Josh McGuinness.
Top scummer.
Good name. But yeah, he fit in well, didn't he?
Yeah, and I thought as well, like you say, he hasn't played a lot of football, but he's the kind of player you need, one of those players who, similar to what Harvey Rogers has done this year, won't steal the show, but he'll give you a 6 or a 7 out of 10 every time he plays. And that's what you need. You need most of your team to be 6, 7 out of 10. Then let your flair players, who will have good and bad days, carry the games for you. But I thought the back three were tremendous. I think Hughes, like a fine wine, just gets better with age. Nottingham, when he signed, people were agape. What are you doing, giving a 3-year contract to a 30-odd-year-old? Absolutely superb. Can throw a ball further than most people can kick it. Barkley was class. Rodgers has come back from the dead this year. Baxter, we're going to talk more about Baxter later on, but superb. The number of clean sheets we've kept this year. You know, people forget about that because we're such a good team going forwards. We're tidy at the back as well. We're solid. And it gives the Fleur players a good foundation to do what they do.
Yeah, Hull City had scored in the last 16 away games as well before last night. So we stopped them, and they were also unbeaten in the last 5. Nathan Baxter, wow. But yeah, again, Nottingham has come in and just looks like someone who almost he's been with us for 3 years. He's to say he's been, you know, a squad player at Blackpool. Yeah. I mean,
I already think, you know, I think he's got cult hero makings, and he hasn't been there that long. I think you know, hopefully the sheriff will be here for a long time to come.
Yeah, I think it helps playing in that position as well, doesn't it? That we've moved, in the formation of the back three, because it gives him that opportunity to slot in.
He's got the legs as well. For an older player, he's not slow.
No.
I mean, Hughes is losing a bit of his pace, but he's got great positional nous. But when the sheriff gets going, he's got to turn a pace.
Yeah, he does. He's quick. I mean, that's what
he's in the final third lot, isn't he?
Even last night, they never look like that we're under the cosh, really. The back three look so calm. Mark Hughes, like you say, a fine wine. He has got a better every single year that he's been with us. And when we went into League One, I was questioning whether he'd be good enough. But, I mean, he's arguably one of the best defenders in the league. So consistent. His positional play, like you say, he's lost a bit of pace. His positional play is that good. Like Maldini said, if you've got to make a tackle, then you've already made a mistake. Well, Hughes is there, and he mops that ball up 9 times out of 10, and it's so relaxing just to watch him, because he just slinks back and forth that back line, and like I say, he's always there. He's so calm.
He's always been a good defender, but he's got a lot better on the ball.
Yeah,
like again, that comes with time and practice. But the number of moves that start off with him.
Well, I mean, if he spent most of his career at Morecambe in League Two, they're not going to be playing out from the back, are they, for most of it? No. He spent some time at Stevenage, they're shit, they're not playing out from back. So it's something that he's getting used to with being with us, because we unlike Morecambe, Stevenage, we're a side that plays total football.
we're Barcelona, they're Barrow, aren't they? That's the way it goes.
Although, shout out to Morecambe, it looks like they're going to come up.
Yeah. And again, helped out by Stanley. So us dicking Plymouth 5-0. Derek Adams gets the sack, goes to Morecambe. You're welcome.
You're welcome, boys. Get us a pint next time you see us.
Yeah. And like you say, a little bit of, I mean, Carlisle are up there as well. So it'd be great to have Carlisle and Morecambe in Division 3 next year. Oh, if indeed we're still in Division 3.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. It's win-win, isn't it?
Yeah.
Blackburn, Preston, Morecambe.
Yeah. I was looking the other day, actually. The season that we almost went up, you know, the Stevenage game that we don't talk about.
That we've spoken about often.
Yeah. If we'd have gone up that year, because we timed it. I mean, when we did go up, we missed out because we went into League One the same year that Oldham and Bury went down.
Yeah.
And Blackburn and Wigan went up. So if they'd have stayed, you'd have had us, Blackburn, Wigan, Blackpool, Fleetwood, Oldham, Bury, Rochdale. So you'd have had 8 Lancashire teams.
Imagine.
So you'd have had 16 Lancashire derbies a year.
Every
other game would be Lancashire derby.
Oh my God.
You guarantee at least one Lancashire derby every month. Really, aren't you? You know.
I mean,
that's nearly half the league. 8 clubs.
It's quite upsetting to think about that, to be honest. Yeah. But there we go then. So Stanley up to 8th, and the confidence is back, and that brings us up to what more to get your confidence up than a 308-mile trip to the arse end of nowhere, Plymouth Argyle?
Yep, nice trip to let's have it practically France.
Yeah.
So a bit of a European trip for the lads. It's one of those I wanted to tick it off this year. I've never been to Plymouth, but just because it's so far and it just sort of needs to be done. But yeah, it's always a tough place. We don't have a great record there. I believe we won 1-0 a few years ago, but it's one of those places you do take a point. Ryan Law's done a great job there, brought them up, and people forget this, that they're a big club. They're certainly as big a club as someone like Burnley. They've got a massive catchment, so they're the only, you know, there's only them, Torquay and Exeter.
Yeah, the catchment area is ludicrous. Yeah.
And Cornwall doesn't have a Football League club. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have a professional club at all.
No.
So they've got all of Cornwall for catchment. You know, it puts into perspective where Exeter is their massive hated derby. It's 40 miles.
Yeah.
You know, it's like us counting Leeds as a derby.
I remember a Plymouth fan giving me some shit once on Twitter.
About Gates.
Yeah, something about Gates. And I remember plonking a 40-mile... map over Aki,
yeah,
and sending it to him and just being like, imagine the gates we'd get if we had that kind of.
There's something, I mean, there's 14 just in Lancashire, there's like 14 Football League clubs.
Well, it's the home of football, isn't it? The North.
Yeah. There's 5 Premier League clubs, you know, it's a very saturated area. I mean, there's a sign in Hampton where the Hampton Inn is. nice niche reference if you're not from here.
Yeah.
And I always look at it and it says like Blackburn 5 miles, Burnley 4, or something like that, Accrington 2 or 3. And I think just that image shows how congealed the area is.
Yeah.
You've got Blackburn one side, more successful town team in Britain. You've got Burnley the other side, probably the smallest town to ever win the top flight. Two towns with greater footballing pedigree that I could literally walk to in under 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know, 5 miles either way, it's ridiculous. The equivalent would be to take Plymouth Argyle and put them, I mean, what's a big southern club to put?
Maybe London where?
Put West Ham, 5 miles one way, put, not necessarily an Arsenal or something as big as that, but put a Crystal QPR, Palace, yeah. 5 miles either way, and see how you get on.
Yeah, so it's a stupid
false argument, comparison.
But they are, I think, I mean, we've been there when there's, I've never been either because yeah. It always seems to... We always seem to play them just before Christmas. Well,
the Football League, yeah, I was going to say in the wisdom, 1 year, I'm pretty sure we had Plymouth and Southend both away in the week before Christmas. You know, a week that's meant for derbies, really, isn't it? You know, double headers, Boxing Day, New Year's Day should be back-to-back derbies for me, like when we used to play Morecambe. But it does take its toll on the players because you've either got to stay over. It's a long trip. It's a little bit different than going to Rochdale. Do you know what I mean? They're a good side. They've got a good home record. Pre-COVID, they get big gates on because of the catchment. But again, you know, you can't... If you're going to pick a time to go, pick it a couple of days after you've knocked the lead leaders off the perch.
Yeah, no fear in going either with the form that we're in. I mean, they're not in bad form, but they're not pulling any trees up. So no. I think we've got to go there full of confidence and, again, try and win the game. Ryan Law, somebody who has got history with Stanley. I mean, he seems alright, but I've heard that he's a bit of a gobshite, so.
Yeah. Well, you were telling me today about the urban myth that he charged a 10-year-old £10 for an autograph.
Yeah, I did tweet him about that once when he used to be very vocal on Twitter, slagging people off, slagging Stanley's pitch off. I remember the year that Stevenage went up in the playoffs when they beat us. He was in the
What's a Stevenage?
Yeah, sorry, scum. If that Stevenage guy is still listening, 5 episodes in, 29 minutes into the fifth episode.
Why don't you buy a raw milk mug? You can smash it. Feel happy about yourself.
Why don't you get a life, mate? Get a life. Stop messaging me. I don't want to meet you. He's never messaged me.
Tell your mum that as well.
I remember he was in the studio for... I can't remember who was in. I think it was Stevenage and like Torquay in the final or something like that. When they won at Old Trafford. Do you remember when they was at Old Trafford?
Yeah, that was the year we should have gone there. Old Trafford.
Who is it that they played in the final?
Torquay. It was the lowest attendance at a League Two playoff final ever.
Torquay.
Until, I think, Fleetwood Burton.
That is a year that they would have wanted it at Wembley, them two sides.
Yeah.
But
We would have took 10,000 to Old Trafford.
I remember Stevenage...
The town was ready to go.
Oh, yeah. Stevenage scored an absolute peach of a goal. And it went to... Bury had been promoted that year already, so he was like top striker, I think, top goal scorer in the league. So he was in the studio and he cut to him and he said, I mean, if it's a good goal, I mean, if they were playing on Accrington's pitch, they'd have probably gone, took a divot and gone into row Z. And I just remember the fume from Stanley fans was incredible.
Well, I'd say that as a compliment, you know, I've counted the rows and we only go up to J.
Yeah.
So fair play to him.
No, he seems all right, but I mean, he's another one like Joey Barton. You know, like John Coleman almost, the Scousers, they love to win, don't they? So I hope we go there and turn them over.
Yeah, if you are listening, Joey Barton, like you say, just trying to start any fights at job club.
Yeah.
Stay away from them cigars.
Joey, if you've learnt your lesson now, mate. Don't do it again. Because we'll come and we'll do the exact same thing. You know what I'm talking about, Joey. So yes,
sleep one eye open, lad.
So yeah, Plymouth on Saturday, and then we're straight into it again Tuesday night. We're at home, and then we've got 3 home games in a row: Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday.
That's season defining, isn't it?
That is.
That's a
big
one.
But again, we've got 46 games to play. We've only played 20,
so we're halfway through the season. If we take 3 games, we're halfway through the season. You've got to say we're in the mix.
We're in the mix, but there's only 3 months to play them. Which is never happening, surely.
Yeah, so we've got 3 months to find a COVID secure way of getting an open top bus, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'd have to have like 5. Anyway.
fleets.
All right then, let's move on.
People watching through the windows on Whalley Road.
Yeah. waving flags. That's what people do anyway, the boring bastards. Get behind your club, Accrington. Okay then, let's go into our classic players. So, classic players. I want to... I'm deciding what to call this now. I want it to be something. I want it to be the Someone's Hall of Fame. So, I was thinking maybe the Eric Worley Hall of Fame. Or I was thinking maybe the Jack Barrett Hall of Fame. If you go there a little bit more left field, the Bill Holding Hall of Fame. Make it a little bit out there, possibly. I was going to put it as a poll on Twitter, and people could... send their own choices in. I've decided against that because we would end up with something.
Fall on a bougie.
Yeah, the On a Bougie Hall of Fame. And if the Twitter poll speaks, then I can't go against it. So I've decided I'm just not.
You mock Fall on a Bougie, but he's the greatest striker over 6 foot with a surname being with O that has ever played for us in the Football League. You can't take that away from him. That is a fact. Plus, yep. Plus, he once tried a step over, and it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. So, you can't begrudge the man.
Listen, he's entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen his record? He's got more clubs than Daft Nick and Tiger Woods combined. So look at this; it's absolutely shocking.
Go through his clubs.
Right, he's only 36. So this is his clubs, right? Preston North End, Huddersfield Town, Barnsley, Peterborough, Cambridge United, Swindon Town, Brentford, Wickham Wanderers, Shrewsbury Town, St Albans City, Macclesfield Town, Accrington Stanley, Weymouth Walking, Grays Athletic, Southport, Boreham Wood, Tooting, Mitcham United and Cheshunt. Now in all that time, all those clubs, he played 4 times for us, 5 times for Weymouth, twice for Walking, 4 times for Wickham, twice for Brentford, 14 for Swindon, and a whopping 34 for Cambridge. That's it. In his career, he's played 34 times for one club. That's it. There's no record of any goals that he scored. Oh, sorry. He got 2 goals at Swindon and 9 goals at Cambridge, and that's it.
I mean, even before he gets to us, he's had, what, 10 clubs?
Stealing a living.
Just give it up, mate. Stealing just get another. Just get a trade.
Yeah. Crazy.
Just get a trade.
You've got to respect him. 6'5", stealing a living.
Do you know what? I've decided we are going to call it after him then.
That's it, the Fall on a Bougie.
From this point onwards, it will be known as... What? How do you say his first name?
Faller.
I always thought it was Florent.
Faller, F-O-L-A.
Faller on a Bougie.
That's Hall my middle name. Faller on a Bougie's Hall of Fame.
Okay, that's the new segment then. Right then, so...
You've listened, Faller, top lad.
Yeah, who are you banging in there then?
Hall of Fame.
Not you... Who are you placing metaphorically in the Hall of Fame?
I'd have to blow dust off it first. So, I've gone for a classic. I've gone for someone who's a legend to any Stanley fan of any age. I've gone for the King of Benin himself, Romy Bocco. Now, I'd like to place on record that his Wikipedia page says that when he signed, Accrington fans were very happy, and it has the quotation, Accrington fans said they were going loco for Bocco. One, no one's ever said that. And two, it's Bocco, not Bocco. Anyway, some sort of A-level poet out there messing with Wikipedia. But yeah, the thing about Bocco was, you've got to remember, it came in 2005, and I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, actually. It was massive news, because we were still in that era of, he's got international caps, he speaks French.
Yeah, he sounds a little bit foreign.
He speaks French. Did he learn that at Aki and Rosendale College?
French, and, never heard of it.
You know, just have this sort of exotic foreign signing. No one really knows, you know, how that came to be. But he just gave the club a lift as well. We were trying to win the conference. We're on the crest of a wave. Just gave people that little boost. We've talked about him, you know, being the first man to score Football League goals in Accrington for 44 years. First Football League brace for Accrington. He got both and... You know, first Football League winner for Accrington in 44 years as well, which will obviously always cement his place in folklore. But every time he came back, He put a smile on people's faces. The fans loved him. And it wasn't jobs for the boys. I remember when he came back in sort of, you know, he came back in 16, 17. And everyone said, oh, yeah, jobs for the boys. He'll sit
after,
on the bench.
After he'd been playing in National League.
Yeah, he'll sit on the bench and it's just jobs for the boys. Coley giving him a few quid and just, you know, letting him ride out his days. He played 41 times. And the number of times he came on and changed games, fantastic.
Well, he was a massive part of that team, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I remember I was watching a game against Doncaster the other day and he was playing everywhere. He was playing like left back in games and stuff like that.
Very versatile.
Very versatile player and somebody who had been there and done that with
just
you know,
a cracking
as well.
Lad as well. Like, you speak to him in the bar when he first came, not much English, but he'd always have time for you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And 156 games, 25 goals, over three periods. 2005, he signed for us, came back in 2018, came back in 2012, came back in 2016.
Yeah.
So three spells, 156 games, 25 goals. And you see some great memories. I mean, he almost got the winner in the Burnley game, you know, Matt Pearson.
Yeah, the header. Nick Pope saved it, yeah.
Which would have been to get the winner against Burnley.
I remember that.
All league goals would have been.
I remember that being, I thinking that was the chance.
Yeah. I mean, if he'd got that, I mean, there'd be children in Accrington called Romuald now, I think. And the fact he actually did play for Benin, you could go in the crowd and watch the African Cup of Nations and see a Stanley player in the African Cup of Nations.
He played,
it blew people's minds.
He did play in the African Cup of Nations, I remember that.
Yeah.
I think it's a strange thing for Stanley as well to, well, we see it sort of with Gary Roberts at the minute, to see someone right at the start of the career and then in the middle and then at the end as well. It's like if Gary Roberts had come five years ago as well.
Yeah, so you have Curly Hurt Boko and you've got Ball Boko.
Yeah.
Ball Boko would be the heart-shaped thing when he scores.
A little bit more chunk.
Yeah. But again, you don't lose your touch.
No.
And he was quality. And he fits into that mould as well of those players who, when they leave Stanley, they never really do anything. But Coley unlocks something in these players. Mm. You know, look at the greats we've had. People like Symes, great when he was here. Lee Molyneux, great when he was here. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
Because Coley just has that knack of just getting an extra sort of 5-10% out of them. That just makes the difference. Interesting fact about Romy. When he left in 2008, so he came back from the African Cup of Nations, requested a transfer because it was homesick. Then his next club turned out to be Sligo.
Yeah.
So part of my geography, that's further away from France than Accrington. Well, it depends on the latitude, really. But
we won't go into that, but I get your point.
Yeah.
Sligo. You look at his other clubs, though. I mean, he's never had massive success in England with other teams, but he has been about, you know.
Yeah, Pompey,
Plymouth Argyle, Chesterfield.
I was intrigued by 2011 when he turned out for Shanghai East Asia.
Yeah, he's also played in
Chinese League.
Hasn't he played in India as well?
Bharat, yeah.
Bharat FC.
Yeah, in Appoon, which is the home of the Venkies who all know friends in Lower Darwin.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, just that's where they're from, yeah.
What is your ultimate favourite Boko memory?
Do you know what? I think the cliche would be the Football League goals. But I was only young, so I couldn't celebrate them as much as other goals. I'm gonna go for, do you remember the Blackpool game where I think it was the first time they'd come to the Crown?
Yes.
And they were a lot better than us. They were 1-0 up, but they were smashing us.
Tom Eldred was playing for them.
Exactly, and he got a brace late on, didn't he? Got a penalty, and which was a very soft penalty.
Yeah.
And then he scored a late winning. We scored like two in the last 5 minutes, didn't we? Smashing ground.
Another one of those magnificent games that lives long in the memory that I was not in attendance for. Because I was at Utrecht FC versus Go Ahead Eagles in
the
Eredivisie.
Go Ahead Eagles, I'll try and find it. They did a great social media video where it just said, like they tend to do, we've got like the slow pan sort of shot of all the different fans, the tea lady, all that kind of thing. And then the slogan at the end was, Go Ahead Eagles, who the fuck are you? It was like a really, you know, like a little twist at the end.
Yeah.
It was an official video, it wasn't like a fan made thing or anything.
That's class.
It was class.
But yeah, I remember seeing the video for that Blackpool penalty and just thinking, how on God's earth is that? I can't see anything that it's given for.
It was so soft, and it was limbs as well, because like you said, they dicked us all game.
Yeah.
And like you said, it was still a novelty to play in Blackpool then, only sort of 5 or 6 years after they'd been in the Prem.
Yeah. Spending big in League 2.
Yeah, so they were a big dog. That was great. Scored a great goal at Notts County away, I seem to remember. Just got the ball, typical Maisie Bocco run.
Ah, that's when me and you were on the train on the way home, wasn't it?
Was that the one?
Back from Manchester, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That was a good good goal. Did we win that game? I think we did.
Yes, we won 2-0.
Yeah. We must have a good record there.
That was the 16-17 season, so that'll be the year after we'd missed out in the playoffs. So we got players like Omar Beckles playing, I think.
Yeah.
My favourite memory of him is, in his second spell, he played in the game. Do you remember when we went to Fleetwood and it was James Beattie's first game?
Who?
And he scored that penalty after about 10 minutes. Yeah. Beattie. And then we were struggling at the time, and we went there and they were playing well. Bocco scored late on to make it 3-1, I think.
Yeah, we won 3-1, yeah.
And I ran to the front.
Was Jeffers playing as well?
Did we have Jeffers then? Yeah, I remember it was Beattie and Jeffers.
I was at Edge Hill and I was working late, so I didn't go to that game. And I remember I hadn't looked at any of the Stanley news or anything. I just got a text off of my mate, Gaz, really texted me, and he just said, "Cannot believe Accrington Stanley strike force is James Beattie and Francis Jeffers."
We,
I was like, yes.
It was a mad game, that. But, yeah, he scored. So he scored a goal where Beattie was in again one-on-one, and he's, like, spaffed his shot, and it's just... He'll say it were a cross, but it's ended up at Bocco's feet, and he sort of finished it. And I've run to the front of that little stand at Fleetwood, and I was like, oh, they don't hug you because they get booked, don't they?
Yeah.
And I remember being right at the front of the crowd, and he was looking at me, and I was like that, and he, like, sort of welcomed me in with his hands, and I just, like,
hug him.
I just embraced him, and it's probably the warmest I've ever felt in an embrace.
If you ever do some kind of sort of pretentious sort of travel book, if you call it Embracing a Beninian,
yeah,
that'd be a great title.
There's a picture
on the front.
There's a picture of that of about six people in the pylon, but I am at the bottom of the pylon.
Yeah.
I remember tweeting the club saying, they asked what his favourite memory was, and I remember tweeting that picture and just saying, him holding me in his arms and letting me know that everything was going to be alright.
It says on Wikipedia here, he's known for hugging famous podcaster Josh Cook.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the number one Accrington Stanley rated podcast in Benin now. But just reading about when he went to the African Cup of Nations, that was a massive deal because it was only the second time they'd ever qualified for it, and he was the captain for all three games as well.
That's ridiculous.
Fair play to
How old is he then?
So that was 2018, so that's take 13 away. So he'll have been 22 then. 22, 23.
In 2018?
No, it's 08 was the African Cup of Nations. 08,
right, yeah. Sorry, I thought you said 2018.
No.
He
was at Leyton Orient then.
Yeah, a quality player. Somebody who...
50 caps as well.
That's very impressive. How many times have you Googled on Google Maps Benin?
To be honest,
I think I could draw it.
Let's be honest. If it wasn't for him, we'd never have heard of Benin.
No.
Fair play if you're listening from Benin, which I doubt. But you do look out for it when you see it on maps and things.
Yeah.
You do think of Bocco, it just comes in your head.
Yeah,
doesn't
I've Googled it a few times. Yeah. Just to double check.
We've got some really. I mean, this might be a topic for another day. We've got quite a few sort of. Odd, tenuous sort of national team link. So, Estonia. Mm-hmm. Estonia's all-time record goal scorer was our under-16s coach recently.
Yes, I do remember that, actually. My granddad's got some great facts about him.
He's the assistant manager of a team in the Estonian Premier League now.
Is he really? I'll get the facts for the next podcast. I can't remember what it is. But yeah, he very much sits pride in place, really, in the Florian Ibuji Hall of Fame. So who have we actually got there now then? Classic players that are in the Hall of Fame. If you're listening, classic players. We've got Ronnie Bocco.
Players. Andy Todd.
Jimmy Ryan.
Peter Murphy.
Luke Joyce. Now, if there's the reason that I did that little pause there is because Luke Joyce is one of them players who we talk about Peter Murphy and again that era where Stanley were full of these proper little journeymen or workhorse players, people that hadn't got anything, grafters. Any contracts anywhere, grafters. Luke Joyce is almost the forgotten hero of that group, isn't he?
Absolutely. When you look at, I mean, I'm sure you'll come to this, but the number of appearances he made, you know, well over 200.
Is, yeah, 246 appearances.
That's a stalwart.
8 goals.
It was Dean Winard.
Shit, yeah. Yeah, 246 appearances, 8 goals in 6 years with the club. A Bolton native, somebody who came up and started his time at Wigan Athletic. Moving on to Carlisle United before 2 loan spells at Barrow, and Northwich Victoria, before he came to us in 2009. And I think Luke is just remembered as somebody who was so consistent for me. I remember him getting a lot of criticism when he was at the club.
Yeah, I mean, there's always been a universal truth. There's Stanley fans have always had a scapegoat. You know, Peter Murphy was the scapegoat for a long time until he turned it round. But for a while, Luke Joyce was the scapegoat, because it's similar to Seamus Keneally now. There's a lot of parallels where if that player has a good game, you don't really notice them. They just keep things ticking over. They do the short passes, they keep holding the ball, they keep possession ticking over. They're not going to score wonder goals, they're not going to fly into stupid tackles, so people assume they've done nothing. But when they're not in the team, you really miss them, and it looks like you've got nothing there. Solid, very rarely injured, very rarely missing through sort of ill discipline. Like you say, similar to Dean Winard the other week, you don't realise until you look how many appearances he actually made.
Yeah, you forget, don't you?
It's testament to them, isn't it? You've got to be a model professional to play over 200 games with our facilities as they were as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you think about it, you know, he's seen through different managers at that time as well, so he's impressed everybody there.
Yeah.
He's captained the club under different managers, and he was just absolutely Mr. Consistency at all times.
I think he does, you know, he does love the club as well, and I think he'll tell himself that. You know, Carlisle, he couldn't turn that move down financially for his family.
Yeah, he's got a young family.
Well, exactly. He'd got a pay rise. He was familiar with the club. It wasn't, you know, uprooting family territory. And, you know, we had our well-documented financial issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we said before with other players, you know, loving the club doesn't put food in your kid's table.
Yeah, I think he did obviously, he couldn't turn that contract down, just left just before that playoff year, so what a ride that would have been for him. But, I mean, I remember he was actually in an earlier fanzine that I did a couple of years ago, and he was the only person who's been, you know, he doesn't know me from Adam, like, he has no idea who I am. But he invited me into his house one day for the interview, so it wasn't just sending me over online, actually invited me to his house. He picked me up from the train station, and I went and sat in his living room for 4 hours to do the fanzine interview. So an absolute class act, and he took me through his whole career, told me about, you know, his family life, everything. He was showing me his newspaper cuttings on his window, on his walls, like, just an absolute salt of the earth, like, absolute class act.
Top man, and like you say, he's at Port Vale now, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And their fans, you know, speak very highly of him.
Yeah.
And once a red, always a red. He scored a screamer against Morecambe last season as well, which is always nice to see. But just a top model pro, a great example to anybody of how to sort of, you know, keep your head down and have a successful footballing career.
I said to him at the time as well, you know, he might not think of himself as being. I asked him how he'd like to be remembered by Stanley fans. And he said somebody who grafted and gave his all for the team, wasn't a flair player, but somebody who, he was an unsung hero. And you can't sum it up better than that, can you, really?
No, I mean, literally unsung, didn't have a song.
Yeah, 6 years with the club, nearly 250 appearances, and doesn't have a song apart from Put Your Hands Up For Luke Joyce, He Loves Big Titties.
And I'd like to make a reference to the often forgotten, didn't catch on, ting tang, wah-wah Luke Joyce.
One of your back catalogue there.
That's a B side, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah,
play it live now and again.
Like you say, you can't turn down a move for a family, his young family, and I do miss him playing, because for so long he was just a constant. Yeah. No matter who came and went, Luke would always be in the centre of midfield, plugging away, putting out six, seven out of 10 performances. A lot like Seamus Keneally, really, these days, isn't he? But
he has been called the Irish Luke Joyce.
Yeah, he'll love that. But yeah,
so it's a high compliment.
These days as well, he's still at Port Vale, like you say. Nearly 100 appearances for them as well in 3 years.
Can't knock him. Is there any truth to the urban myth that his mum's called Joyce Joyce?
I don't know, but looking at his Wikipedia page, his name is Luke James Joyce. So I'm going to guess there's obviously his Irish background, but I don't know. I'll just text him and see. But yeah, Luke Joyce, captain, leader, legend, takes his place in the Forlorn Aboogee Hall of Fame. Thank you very much, Luke.
Top lad.
Okay then, so it's time for a brand new segment here on the Raw Milk Podcast.
Graham Branch Fact of the Week. It's the Graham Branch Fact of the Week.
Graham Branch currently has more EFL appearances than Lionel Messi.
Graham Branch Fact of the Week. It's the Graham Branch Fact of the Week.
Okay then, so we were talking a little bit about how good the players were last night, none more so than Nathan Baxter. Just how impressed were you with his performance?
Yeah, not just last night's performance, generally sort of fantastic, confident, assured. He made one or two decent saves last night, saves that you'd expect him to make, but still, you know, relatively decent. In awful conditions, he came for everything, he caught things, his passing game was good. He looks an absolute class act, to be fair.
Yeah, he looks absolutely quality.
Even that 3-0 battering the week before, for the third one, when he actually saved the Wilkes one-on-one before they had the tap-in, you know, that was a great save as well.
Yeah.
He just gives the back four so much confidence, the back three or four, depending on what we're doing. But he gives the back line, should I say, so much confidence.
Yeah.
And they feel as though they can go back to him. So like last night, there was a few times we went back to him and he was closed down. And I think with lesser keepers, we'd have felt panicked as fans.
Yeah.
But you always knew he could just... You trust him to take a touch.
That's the thing that has impressed me most about him, because he's still very young and he's still quite slight in himself. Mm. You know, I've got no doubt that if I stand next to him, he's probably two feet taller than me. But he's quite slight in himself. He's not a big busty lad. Bulky. he's definitely not a busty lad. But yeah, so like taking a touch under pressure, he's good at. His kicking's fantastic. And what's really impressive for a young, sort of slight keeper, is his punching is ridiculously good as well. Yeah. The free kick last night that Honeyman pops over, or is it Joyce? Mm-hmm. I can't remember. One of them that had longer.
One of the Yorkshire bastards.
Yeah. He's popped it over and he's punched it with so much confidence. Like, I can't remember watching a Stanley keeper in certainly in recent times. Do you know what? Ever really, where I just think I just feel confident when he's got the ball.
No, you're right. A lot of it's people often say of sort of permanent keepers that you sign in League One or League Two, they'll make a rick. And people always say, well, if they didn't make a rick, they won't play in League One or League Two. But his decision making is so good. Like lesser keepers, every so often they'll punch when they should catch, or they'll parry when they should hold, things like that. He always gets it right. Now, having said that, he'll probably get sent off and drop three clangers on Saturday, so I apologise for the podcaster's curse, but he's slotted in and he just looks fantastic.
Yeah.
It's testament. I mean, the number of clean sheets he's kept, it's not a coincidence.
Listeners, he had to wait for his chance with Torby playing so well as well. And he's bided his time well, hasn't he? And he's come in and Torby's going to have to do something special to try and get that shirt off him, I think, for the rest of the season. Touch wood, we know injuries and...
Yeah, I mean, we all know that Cawley's sort of a horrific bad luck with keepers, so let's hope that doesn't happen to Baxter. But he's got the makings of one of our best ever keepers.
Well, you think about, especially as well, loanee keepers that we've had, the best ones that come to mind. Shall we do a bit of a keeper tennis?
Yeah, I mean, Bettinelli.
Darren Randolph.
Rob Elliott.
Paul Rutschubka.
Get out.
I think that's a...
Jesse Joronen.
15 love. Are we just doing any keeper?
Any keeper,
or have they got
like
to be good?
The call is at about 600 keepers.
Ian Dunbavin.
Andrew Dorby.
Dean Bouzarnis.
Ooh, that's good. I like that. Scott Davis,
Tony Warner,
Andy Dibble,
Jay Lynch,
Lou Simpson.
Bear with me. Is there a time limit on this?
Depends on this cash prize.
We must have had Matt Macy. Is he the Arsenal
Matt Macy, yep. The one game, 5-1 defeat.
Yeah.
Marek Rodak, he was decent.
He was decent, you're right. Oh, Jamie Spear.
John Kennedy.
What was the giant called that we had in the playoff year? Jason Mooney.
Ross Etheridge.
You've got me all day. You're coming back. I feel like it, in tennis when someone's...
It's pressure, isn't it?
Yeah.
My next move would have been Stuart Jones.
Yeah, I mean...
And then I would have pulled a blinder out with Danny Alcock, who was the sub-keeper in the conference.
So who is the keeper that I'm thinking of? Was he called, like... I'm going to have to Google that, but... He played for Bury for ages, and then he signed for us on loan. And now he's at, like, FC United or someone like that. Let me just have a look.
Not thinking of Rehobka again?
No. I'm sure he's at FC United now.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some really odd keepers. I mean, 8 in a season, in that 14-15 season. We had 8 keepers on the books that year. Strangely, Babs left.
So we've got 8 keepers in one season.
Yep.
Ridiculous.
Just going to go through them for you now. So we've mentioned most of them there, to be honest. Started off the season with Luke Simpson.
I just remember him from getting sent off at Shrewsbury. Yeah. And was that Beattie's like first away game?
Yeah. So we had Luke Simpson, Jay Lynch, Tony Warner that season, Joe Lumley, Chapman, who we forgot, Chapman.
Chappers, yeah, sorry.
Jesse Joronen, supposed to be an absolute worldie, played one game, snapped his cruciate. Matt Macy, Scott Davis. So 8 keepers.
Scott Davis in the net for when Lawrence Wilson put his penalty into the Irish Sea.
Yep. I hope to find that ball one day.
I will try and find... There's another fantastic video of that penalty that's taken from home end.
There's something that hasn't been mentioned on the podcast for a long time. And is there something about a Murphy goal at Morecambe potentially?
I've got no recollection of that. Peter Murphy?
Yes, Sir Peter of Murphy, yeah.
He scored at Morecambe?
Yeah, I believe it was quite late on as well.
Was it a 2-1 win in the last minute of... We were bottom of the league about 23rd, yeah, October 2013?
So the annals of history say.
Rings a bell. Not quite sure on that one. I'll have to check the history books. But yes, he was in the net for the Lawrence Wilson penalty that got skied, and there's a fantastic video taken by a home fan, and the penalty gets given, and they're all absolutely buzzing, and it's like their main stand, and this guy just goes on the video, "Watch Scottish, he'll go and bloody save this now, won't he?" And then it just shows the penalty, and just as he hits it, the video ends so abruptly, and you just hear, "Ugh!" And I just think, why has he put it on YouTube?
So, a bit of a random keeper here, if you're playing sort of Stanley keeper tennis. François Dubadeau, signed for us in 2006-07 season.
Try saying that after a few beers.
French keeper, you never hear of him. I genuinely thought I'd hallucinated it at some point. Never played for us, but then went on to become a cult hero at Motherwell because he played a blinder against Rangers. Again, one of these sort of dog shit careers. But he got about Bordeaux, Stanley, Cincinnati Kings in America.
He's lived the life, mate, hasn't he, to be fair?
Yeah, but I wouldn't know him if he walked on the street.
No.
The other keeper we were talking about, we didn't actually sign, but first conference season, we were meant to sign a keeper called Jason Petkovic, Australian international, 30 caps, over 200 games of Perth Glory, playing in front of 10,000 every week, and to get him to come to the Crown Ground for a part-time outfit in our first conference season would have been a massive coup, but we couldn't get the work permit. But yeah, so Eric went a bit mad about that. But it was a bit odd because we were, well, it was the second conference season, sorry, so we, our point was, we're professional. And if we were in the EFL, we would have been allowed to sign him. But we are a professional team anyway, so why can't we have him? But needs must, and we weren't allowed. So we went with an extension for John Kennedy. Halcyon days.
That is incredible, isn't it? Like you say, he, well,
I mean, you're probably,
don't want to speculate, do you?
He'd probably gone out of the taxi, had a look round and gone on.
Yeah, which I have heard a few players have done. But there you go, that's who I'm thinking of, Cameron Belford. Remember him?
Decent.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was all right.
Completely forgot him.
Kenny Arthur as well.
Kenny Arthur, yeah, did a silly dance at Rochdale.
Sean Murdoch.
Sean Murdoch.
He was our number one for a while.
Out fella.
He just went back to Scotland. Yeah, we've had terrible.
We've had some good uns and some
shit. Paul Crichton, he was terrible. But again, anybody who was at Exeter when he had a blinder would say he redeemed himself.
Yeah, that's it. With your keeper, you need one game, don't you, that you're remembered for, and you're just a hero forever.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking as an ex-goalkeeper
of
a terrible standard.
I mean, a future inductee of the Forlorn Abuja Hall of Fame will no doubt be Ian Dunbabin, in my opinion, because he used to get so much, you know, shit spoken about him by idiots. He was a good crack, he was a good bloke, and he actually had more sort of great games than people remember. Kept Nottingham Forest out on his own. Anybody who went to Middlesbrough when we won 2-1 in the League Cup, we should have lost that game about 6-0. He just made save after save.
Morecambe penalty last minute.
And people forget as well, the rest of that game he was great.
Yeah.
He had a blinder to the extent Jim Bentley said, I knew he'd save it.
Wow.
He said, like, well, I knew he'd probably save it given the game he'd had. Do you know what I mean?
Honestly, excellent.
And the irony with Bavs was, I mean, Bavs always had a bit of a rick in him, which is why he was a League Two goalkeeper, but he started to pick up injuries when he was at his peak. Like, he was playing out of his skin game in, game out, and then he just started sort of, you know, injuries took it away from him, really, because we would have another 5 years out of him, I think.
Save it for the Forlorn Abuja Hall of Fame, mate.
We'll save it for the Forlorn Abuja Hall of Fame.
One last thing, just before we go on this latest episode. On a past podcast, I did mention Dean Winard having a bit of a ruckus with Kevin Ellison in a service station toilet. I've got it on good authority that that story is absolute bullshit. I don't know where I've got it from. Maybe I dreamt it, but just a little disclaimer in there. Yeah. And that was bollocks.
Yeah, I mean, you do like to hang around service station toilets, don't you? But don't conflate Stanley players with your terrible hobbies.
Up the Reds.
Up the Reds.
Thank you for tuning in to Raw Milk. Our theme music is Mr. Powder by Deja Vega. Our producer is Scott Borton. Follow us at Raw Milk Zine on Twitter and Instagram and Raw Milk Fanzine on Facebook. You can also download, subscribe and like all of our podcasts at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Up the Reds!
Podcast Network. Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.